Live from Southern California, this is
hey now,
the Jim
welcome to the
Rome
Daily
Show.
Double. We had an epic show today. Russell Westbrook is your NBA MVP, but Bill Russell won the NBA award show last night, and we had four tremendous interviews. Back-to-back Stanley Cup champ Sidney Crosby, Denver Nuggets point guard Jameer Nelson, New York Giants quarterback Eli Manning, and my man Sacramento Kings head coach Dave Yeager. All of that and my thoughts on UFC fighter Justine Kish. Yes, clones, I am aware, and I saw what happened. Alvy, go ahead. Let's roll that thing so we can get it. Let me start with the NBA Awards. You saw that last night. They had their first ever NBA Awards program. I'm not going to say that was the smoothest production I've ever seen, but it was good. In fact, it was very good. So much better than when they used to just hand out the awards at a presser at random times throughout the postseason. And of course, last night, the biggest award was the MVP. You know, the award that had been debated all season long. And in the final voting, although that debate went back and forth all year long, the final voting wasn't close at all. In fact, it was a blowout. Russ Westbrook received 69 of 101 first-place votes. James Harden got 22. Kawhi Leonard, 9. LeBron James, a single vote. Now, let's be real for a minute. I was riding with Harden for much of the season because, to me, the numbers were close and his team was better. But late in the season, Russell changed my mind because there was simply no way to ignore what that guy was doing. First player since Moses Malone in 1981 to win the MVP on a team that won fewer than 50 games. But he just did too much, way too much, to be overlooked or passed over. Led the league in scoring, third in assists, 10th in rebounding. He broke Oscar Robertson's record for triple-doubles in a season with 42. He joined the Big O as the only player in NBA history to average a triple-double for the season. Everybody has seen that shot of Russ staring at Kevin Durant's MVP trophy from a few years back. He was eyeing that thing like it owed him money. And then when KD left for Golden State, everybody joked that Westbrook would go scorched earth, that he would just go out and average a triple-double every single night to make sure that he won the award. Except he did just that. 32, 12, and 9 in his first game of the year. 51, 13, and 10 in his second. 33, 11, and 16 in the third. Those are video game numbers, and yet they became a nightly occurrence. Any one of those would be a career game for nearly anyone who has ever put on an NBA jersey. But for Westbrook, it was essentially average, something he did every single night. And then there were nights like that 45-point outing in Boston in December on 13 of 25 from the field to go along with 11 rebounds and 11 assists. And then 57, 13, and 11 at Orlando in March. 50, 16, and 10, including a 36-foot bomb that beat the Nuggets and eliminated them from playoff contention and broke the Big O's record. All of that at once. So this guy had a year. This guy's had a life. And when he finally received that award, you can imagine even he became emotional.
So my little brother, my road dog, you mean so much to me, man. You're my role model. You're my role model. I look up to you, man. I truly look up to you. You're amazing, blessed. I'm so happy to have you as my brother. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. My brother, man, he texts me every single game at halftime, every game. Since I've been in the league, he texts me every game at halftime. He don't got to do that, man. He does that because he has a kind heart, and he looks out for me. Man, I love you from the bottom of my heart, brother. I promise you. I appreciate everything you do for me, everything.
Emotional evening and a truly well-deserved award. And I've got more thoughts on that I'll get to a little bit later on, but I want to open up this or break into this and go in a different direction too. More on Russell Westbrook a little bit later on. Because the real MVP last night may not have even been Westbrook. It may not have even been Russell Westbrook, but a different Russell. William Felton Russell, better known as Bill Russell, who received the Lifetime Achievement Award. And when you run down his list of accomplishments, it sounds like three or four lifetimes. An 11-time NBA champion, the first player to win an NBA championship, a college title, and an Olympic gold medal. A civil rights pioneer. The first African-American to coach a professional sports team. The first African-American coach to win a championship. A member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. A Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient. And the list goes on and on. And when I had him on this show back in May of 2009, I referred to him as a Hall of Famer, and he quickly jumped in to correct me. Bill Russell is my guest. He's a Hall of Famer. The book that Bill Russell has written is entitled...
Jim Rome.
Yes.
Excuse me for interrupting you.
Sure.
But would you do me a favor?
Absolutely.
I would prefer if you would describe me as former captain of the Celtics rather than Hall of Famer, because to me, being captain of the Celtics is far more prestigious than any other thing.
Goosebumps, right? Goosebumps. That was on this show back in 2009, May of 2009. I mean, that says so much about the man. That for everything that he accomplished on the court, the thing that mattered most to him was being captain of the Celtics. He corrected me when I introduced him as a Hall of Famer and said he would rather be referred to as the former captain of the Celtics. This is why he's Bill Russell, and there's nobody else like him. And then last night, he accepted the Lifetime Achievement Award from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal, David Robinson, Dikembe Mutombo, and Alonzo Mourning. And then when he came up on stage, he looked those five Hall of Famers up and down, counted them off, and then said this.
I would kick your ass.
Truth. Truth. I know Bill Russell's 83. Just like I know that he would and could kick their asses. Our guest is Sidney Crosby. Sidney, it is so good to have you on the program. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good, good, Sidney. So you've had a little bit of time since winning Game 6 in Nashville to clinch your second straight Stanley Cup, third overall. As you look back on that game and the celebrations afterwards, what are the images or the feelings that come to mind first?
Probably Patrick Hornquist on top of the pile when we scored that empty netter. Carl Hagelin scored. I think he's shedding a few tears, but that one comes to mind. Just, you know, he's an emotional guy for our team. Was playing through a pretty tough injury, and you know, for him to get the winning goal and to have a huge impact on that game of playing against you know, his former team was pretty special moment.
Sidney Crosby joining us. You know, the old saying is winning a championship is tough, but repeating is even tougher. Going into the season, you knew that no team had gone back-to-back in nearly 20 years. You knew it was going to be really hard. Did you know how challenging it would be, though, until you were actually in it?
No, you don't. I mean, you try to prepare for it, but, you know, just dealing with the injuries, and probably a lot of that had to do with the fact that we had played such a long season in the one prior, but I think it takes its toll over, you know, over a period of time, and we just kind of kept fighting through it, and guys who came in, some young guys stepped in and done, you know, did a phenomenal job, and we just tried to find a way to get through that. We knew once we got to the playoffs that we had a lot of experience and a lot of the same group, you know, back from last year, so we were pretty confident that, you know, if we just kind of got ourselves into the playoffs and built some momentum that we could find a way to do it again.
See, that's the thing. You went to exactly the point that I was going to ask you about, because there's nothing more grueling than the NHL postseason, and you went through 25 playoff games, one short of the longest postseason run in league history, to win this cup. So as a team, how were you able to survive the injuries and the grind and still come out on top? How'd you do it?
Just the, I think, you know, the guts and character of the guys. I mean, you look at our defense core and, you know, missing Chris Letang, who was a big part of that group last year and even this year until he got injured. I mean, he played a lot of minutes, and a lot of different guys had to make up for those minutes. And, you know, they stepped up. They had some guys had some bad injuries, you know, some broken hands, broken ribs. And I don't know how they did it, but they found a way to go out there and get the job done. And our goaltending was amazing. Both guys stole games for us. You know, Flower was unbelievable those first two rounds, and then Murr stepped in and was really solid for us all the way through. So we just had some big plays from different guys, but the biggest thing was just, you know, guys showed a lot of character and will there to get us through.
Quick break in the action. Let me talk to you for a moment about Stamps.com. Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package using just my computer and printer, and the mailman picks it right up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com. We will help you decide the very best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. Don't do that. I use Stamps.com because I'm never going to the post office again, ever. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the very top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Sidney Crosby joining us once again. You look at the last year, Sidney. You've won 2 Stanley Cups, 2 Conn Smythe trophies, the World Cup of Hockey Championship. You were named MVP, named one of the 100 greatest players of all time. You became the first player since Wayne Gretzky 30 years ago to lead the NHL in goals and win a cup. I mean, that's a hockey lifetime in a single year. What was the last year like for you?
It's been pretty crazy. I think when you're in it, you don't really think about it a whole lot. There's so many games, and you know, the things you're talking about Stanley Cup finals and World Cup and things like that. Those are such great opportunities and big moments. I don't think you allow yourself to think about, you know, everything else. I think that you're just so focused on what you've got to do and trying to make the most of it. But it's certainly been a lot of fun. I know it's those things are hard to do, but it's a lot of fun when you're playing in those important games and those big moments. And as a hockey player, that's what you want to be doing.
Yeah, right. In terms of important games and big moments, it's a question I used to ask of Joe Montana quite a bit. And I think I can ask you too, because one of the things that your teammates and coaches talk about is the fact that you're able to play your best when the stakes are the highest. Is it something that you can consciously dial up and find another gear when you have to have it?
Yeah, I think you can. I think that, you know, it definitely doesn't happen overnight, but I think you build confidence. And I think, you know, playing on, you know, championship teams or playing with a group of guys that have gone through it before, I think that gives you confidence in knowing that you might not necessarily have to, you know, make the big play yourself. There's other guys that can do it. So I think everyone just tries to do their part. And, you know, I think everyone wants to raise their game when it means the most. And I try to do that like everyone else. And, you know, that's part of playing on a team. And, you know, we've had different guys step up, but definitely with different experiences, you know, I think that hopefully that allows me to be able to find that level when we need it.
Sidney Crosby joining us for a few more moments. You know, now that the team has won 2 straight, I think it's easy to forget that things were not looking so good early on last season. I thought that you wrote a fascinating piece for Sports Illustrated after last year where you talked about how the stretch from October to December was, quote, awful, the lowest point of my career outside of injury. Can you share what it was about that time that made it so challenging, so awful?
Yeah, I think there's just, you know, the team struggling, and I think you put a lot of that, you know, that weight on your shoulders, and individually I was struggling, and you want to help in any way you can. And, you know, I think that, number one, you've got to start with your own game and making sure that it's where it needs to be, and then on top of that, you want to be there for your team. You want to, you know, lead, and you want to make sure that you get things on the right track. So I think trying to manage all those things at once was difficult, and you know, the biggest thing was my own game that needed to improve. So I felt like once I was able to do that, things got better. But I think, you know, as a group, I think it brought us closer together. We had a lot of new guys at that point, you know, starting that season, and it kind of brought us together a bit, and probably was a big reason why we were able to rally there late in the season.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought up leadership, because to get that C on that sweater in your sport is really different than almost any other sport. In fact, it's funny, Sidney, a few moments ago I played back a cut that I had of Bill Russell, the great center for the Celtics. When he came on the show back in 2009, I introduced him as a Hall of Famer, and he immediately cut me off and said, "If you don't mind, Jim, please refer to me as the former coach, or I should say former captain of the Celtics." So let me ask you, what's it mean to have that C on that sweater?
It's a huge honor. There's so much pride and responsibility and things that come with that. And, yeah, you look at, you know, previous captains throughout the league here in Pittsburgh. You want to make sure that, you know, you follow that up and that you make sure you do your part. So I think as you get older, I think you appreciate even more. I was given the C at a pretty young age, and hope that I've learned a lot over the course of that period of time. But that's a great thing. You can always get better. There's always situations you have to learn from, and there's a lot of responsibility that comes with it, but it's a great honor to have it.
Eli Manning is our guest. Eli, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Good talking to you.
Eli, great to talk to you. The team added Brandon Marshall in free agency. What does he bring to the group?
Well, I think, Brandon, just been impressed with his professionalism. A guy who's, been in the league now, going into his 12th year. But, he came in right when we signed him. We were on the phone in April talking about the offense. He, met us down at Duke University for some workouts. Just wanted to learn, everything about the offense. He had questions every day. He works hard. He was at every practice, trying to do everything the right way. So he's a guy who's got attention to details, and just every day he's got a question for me about what he can do better, making sure he's on the same page for practice. And I think he'll be great in the locker room as a leader, but also on the field in his playmaking ability.
Giants quarterback Eli Manning joining us once again. Now, you've had some really good receiving corps in your time with the Giants, back to when you had Plexico Burress, Amani Toomer, Steve Smith, and then you had Victor Cruz, Hakeem Nicks, and Mario Manningham. So how do you think this group stacks up with the best groups that you've had in your time with the Giants?
Well, it certainly has potential. Obviously with Odell, I think Sterling Shepard had a great first year. I think he'll have an even better second year. You throw in Brandon Marshall our new rookie tight end with Evan Engram. So there's definitely the potential to be a great group. It's now just a matter of how we work together, our preparation, our commitment, our work ethic during months right now, all the way through August and during the season. So I'm excited about the potential, and now we just got to go prove it on Sunday.
Eli Manning joining us. He's appearing on behalf of the Gatorade Beat the Heat program, which we'll address in just one moment, too. Eli, you mentioned Odell. So obviously when you're in New York and Odell does not attend OTAs, that's going to be a huge topic of discussion. And you yourself will hear the questions about that on a daily basis. Do you ever say, hey, Odell, can you do me a favor? Make sure that I'm not the one that gets these questions.
That's just part of it. When stuff happens, the media, they usually ask the head coach and ask the quarterback to answer the question. So, Odell and I, we talk constantly, and he's up front with me about what his plans are, when he's going to be there, and what he needs to do to get better. So, I promote him and doing whatever it takes for him to be at his best. And for that, he thought he needed to be training on his own in California to get his workouts to make sure he's healthy and ready to go for the upcoming season. We got the workout, a decent amount in April before the practice, just on our own, throwing routes and getting on the same page. We got the mini camp, and then we'll have all the training camp. But, he's a guy, he knows the offense. He's a great practice guy. He's a great work ethic, and we got plenty of time to get on the same page and work on things and have a big year.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you just said. Is there any question or any concern on your part that he'll be locked in mentally and physically when that season starts?
No, there's no question. He's a workhorse. He loves the training. He knows his body, knows what he's got to do to get ready. And so, he felt that this is the best way for him to get prepared. And, sometimes, as athletes, you know your body better than anybody else. You know what you need to do to get in the best shape and get the most work. And so that's what he felt. And, you got to support the guy because, he is working. He is doing the right things, and he is trying to get better.
We're talking to Giants quarterback Eli Manning. I ran down your resume at the very top of the interview. You've accomplished everything there is to accomplish in the game, both on the field and off of it. So at this point, what motivates you?
The whole motivation is just putting another trophy in the trophy case, getting that fifth trophy for the New York Giants organization. So that's what it's all about. I think there is excitement about this team, and that's a good thing. I think, having players that are excited and realizing you got a good squad, you have some good players, and now it's a matter of we got to prove that we're good. We got to prove that we can go out there Sunday and hang with the best teams and and you know, bring our best effort, our best performance on those days. And you know, that's exciting, you know, and if we go out there and we play our best football, we're going to be a tough team to beat.
Eli, to that point, one of your offensive linemen, Justin Pugh, said earlier this month that he feels like this team does have the makings of a Super Bowl, and as much as he wants to win one personally, he wanting to win a third one for you is part of his motivation. He said, quote, to be a part of the legacy of probably a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest to put the Giants uniform on, it would be something special to be a part of that for him, to cement his legacy. He was talking about you. What's your reaction when you hear that or hear a teammate say something like that about you?
You know, I think that's special to hear. Just because I think when you have a group of guys who are playing for each other, that's when great things happen. It's not about individual stats. It's not about individual glory. It's about you know, kind of putting your selfish commitments aside and then doing it about the team and putting the team first. And I think that's the start. And just like he wants to do it for me, I want to do it for those guys who've never had the opportunity to win a playoff game, to win a championship. You know, these guys, they work hard. They deserve to be a part of it. And Justin's been a guy who's been working hard, and he deserves to be part of something special. So you definitely want them to have that feeling.
You're working with Gatorade and their Beat the Heat program. Exactly what are you doing today as part of that program?
You know, today they got here in New Jersey, they got a 7-on-7 camp going. So right now I'm watching some plays. Got a team right here on third down on the 5-yard line, ran a little pick play, and they got tackled at the 1. But so today, just watching these guys, promoting them and encouraging them to keep working during the summer. Doing these 7-on-7 camps are great, but also just the importance of staying hydrated while you're working. It can't be just during the workouts. It can't be just when you're thirsty. It's got to be an all-day commitment when you know you're playing these games. It's going to be hot outside. It's about drinking water, drinking Gatorade during the performance, and staying hydrated throughout the whole day.
We're joined by head coach Dave Yeager. There have been a lot of talk of De'Aaron Fox maybe going earlier. So when he was available with the 5th pick, how pleased were you, and what excites you the most about his game?
Yeah, we're fired up. I think you've got a guy that can run your team for 10 years there. And he's got a level of quickness in a herky jerky from here to 6 feet away that is very rare to find. I think he's similar to Mike Conley in that regard. Mike is very slippery, quick, and De'Aaron has that. He's got a charisma and an energy about him that is a joy to be around. Very positive program he came from and a solid family, so I think there's a lot of positives there and what he can do with his game.
You know, in terms of speaking of the program where he came from, John Calipari has talked about his heart and his ability to make teammates better. Fox himself said, quote, a lot of people say that I could be a franchise changer, and that's really what I want to be, end quote. I mean, franchise changer is a lot of pressure to put on a young guy, but do you feel like he's got that kind of potential to be just that?
Well, I hope he doesn't think about it. I think, you know, you just got to go out and play, and you get better every day by competing, and he's a competitor. And it's going to be a struggle for us for a couple of years with a really, really young team. And you want to go to the gym every day with people that you want to be around, guys that have a high level of character and work ethic, and he's that guy.
Dave, you're joining us. All right, so it's going to be a process, obviously. You went to the playoffs 3 straight years as head coach in Memphis. So what was it like when you didn't make the postseason last year? Did it feel a little bit weird?
Yeah, April 13th was really early for me. I didn't know what to do for a couple weeks there.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's different. But, you know, with the trade in the midseason there, you know, we kind of pivoted our position of what we're doing as an organization. And now you look at it from a longer point of view and broader strokes. And I think, I feel like everybody believes, and so do I, that, you know, we're going in the right direction.
Then the team also traded the 10th pick to Portland for the 15th and 20th pick, which meant they added Justin Jackson from North Carolina, Harry Giles from Duke. Giles is really interesting in the sense that a short time ago, he was regarded as one of the top players in the class. He suffered some injuries since then. So what kind of expectations do you have for him?
Yeah, it's a good question because, you know, it's very similar to, rewind 1 year earlier. Scal Labissiere was one of the top 2 or 3 players, him and Ben Simmons, in the country as a high schooler. And all of a sudden he's, you know, sitting down there at 25, 26. You know, he didn't forget how to play. He had a tough year at Kentucky. And now, you know, same similar situation with Harry where he's, you know, one of the top 3, and a lot of places had him as the number 1 high school player coming out of high school. So Had a tough year with injuries, and didn't think he played a ton of minutes. And so, you know, they didn't forget how to play. So, you know, I'm just, what we did with Scal is probably what we'll do the same thing with here is learn one position at a time, work on one or two things at a time, get solid, get your feet on the ground, and then with the talent, then after you master one or two things or one or two positions, then you expand it.
Sacramento Kings head coach Dave Yeager joining us. And then, in addition to that, with a 34th pick, you're able to get Frank Mason III from Kansas, and all he did was win pretty much every National Player of the Year award this season. So what does he bring to the team in terms of both talent and attitude?
He's got an edge to him. I really like
Dave. Sorry about that.
No,
Dave,
no, it's probably me.
No, I got you.
It's
now.
Probably
you
me.
Right.
I landed in Minneapolis last night. I'm driving up to Central Minnesota to do a little farm work and hang out and be quiet for a little while and relax. But,
and you still call the show, which I appreciate. Go ahead.
Hey, Frank Mason's a stud. I mean, as you said, lots of awards. And what I like about Frank is I see some Jameer Nelson in him. He's got an edge to him. He takes tough shots. He makes tough shots. Guys like playing with him. And I think when you look, okay, 4 years, all he did was battle back all these 19-year-old one and done that are shooting for him. I got to get better than Frank Mason. And he'd become a top, you know, whatever pick. What I'm excited for Frank is now Frank and De'Aaron are the 74th and 75th best point guards in the NBA today, right? Now everything is in front of them. Now the ladder, they're at the bottom of the ladder, and everybody is in front of them that they can grab. And both those two guys have that mindset that, you know what, you're going down. I'm gonna get to that ladder right there, that they get that rung, and I'm going to pass this guy. And that's what competition's all about. That's the fun stuff for me.
You know, Dave, it's funny that you said, when you disappeared for 1 second, said that, hey, that's probably me. I'm in Central Minnesota. I'm going to go do some farming right now. You actually led me to my next point. I was going to say, you're the son of a coach, so coaching is in your blood. Knowing that, did you add some extra time at a time during the season when you normally don't? What did you do? I mean, were you actively trying to figure out how to get Buddy Hield some more open looks, or did you try and get some time away and blow off a little bit of steam?
I did. But, you know, the point was that you never shut it off. 365, 24/7. After a win, you're thinking about, you know, how can we be better? After a loss, you're disappointed, and you're trying to figure out how you can help our guys. And so after the season was over, you're trying to reflect on the team that you have, and now, you know, we've added four guys and a possibility with Bogdanovich coming over. And then there's free agency. So I've got a little bit better idea of what we're wanting to do, and we'll know a lot more in the next couple weeks.
Let's see now. What about the Sacramento experience so far? You had coached in Sacramento as a visiting head coach. You did some homework on that city and the fan base before you arrived. What's it been like living and working in Sacramento now for a full season?
You know, it's interesting. You know, certainly you have the change between Arco and then going down to just, you know, the best arena in the country in the Golden One Center, which is fantastic. But the fans and the passion and just living there in the community, Jim, is I would think that Sacramento may be the most Midwestern valued cities in California. People really look you in the eye. They're genuine. They're sincere. And as Kings fans, they are, you know, extremely loyal and passionate. And, you know, I love talking hoop, whether we're playing golf or at the grocery store or whatever. You can feel it, and it runs right through the community.
And then what about the team, Dave? Do you feel like that team is starting to take on the attitude and approach that you want to have in your team?
Yeah, we've got a lot of cement to let dry. You know, we got a lot of new guys, and you know, what is it that we want to be about, and emphasizing that to them on a daily basis. And my goal is that, you know, whether we're, you know, 10-40 or 40-10, you come to practice, you don't know the difference. That's how we want to work. We want to keep our heads up and have a positive energy of work and doing it together. And then as your players and their characteristics come out, I'd love for us to just be a tough, hard-nosed group of guys that care about each other. And when you play the Kings, when you get done and you're in your locker room, you know you played the Kings, whether you won or lost, that you had to battle that night.
Dave Yeager, my guest. So what do the next couple of days look like on the farm? You doing some heavy labor, some manual labor, got to fish a little bit? I got to know, a guy like you, what do you do to get away? And when you get to that farm, what's it like?
You know, this is redneck, but I mean, if I get a chainsaw in my hand, that's like playing golf. You know what I mean? I'll cut stuff down. Maybe that's how my golf game is too, but, you know, sitting on the tractor and pulling stumps and moving stuff around and you know, you got food plots for the deer and those kinds of things, and I enjoy it.
Oh, man, I love that. Sacramento Kings head coach Dave Yeager, my guest. Dave, great to run you down, especially since this is a little bit of time off for you. Great to get caught up. Thank you very much, and I'll look forward to doing it again once the season starts.
You are a big, huge stud, man. Thanks for having me on.
Jameer Nelson is my guest. So you're coming off a season where the team improved by 7 wins. You had a good look at a playoff spot. You came up just short. So, Jameer, when you look back on the past season, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Well, it was a disappointment. I mean, we all, you know, as a team and a staff, coaching staff, we thought we definitely could make the playoffs. And, you know, we thought that from the beginning. And we, you know, fell a little short. You know, the expectations of the media and everybody else had us probably finishing last in the West. But, you know, we're on up and up, in my opinion, and I think, you know, things, you know, are bright in Denver for us.
Yeah, you've got some great young talent, which I'll talk to you about in a minute, but you had a really productive year. And I know the last few games were a little frustrating because of a right calf injury that lingered down the stretch, but how much pride do you take in the fact that you're still playing at the level you're playing at 13 years in?
I mean, you know, I guess that's a tribute to my work ethic. I think, you know, it's big. I mean, I'm not a guy that's 6'8", 6'9", with a ton of, you know, gifts, God-given gifts in terms of my size. But, you know, God gave me the ability to have a strong mind and, you know, be able to focus on my work and my craft and continue to be effective in the league.
Jameer Nelson joins us once again. Now, you're an East Coast guy. So when you were first dealt to Denver, what was your reaction? And was there any part of you that thought, hey, I'm not sure this is the place where I want to go and play and work?
Of course. I mean, I've you know, with having kids and wife and kids, you want to stay as close as possible to them. You know, we decided that it was just more stability here in Pennsylvania for them, for school and family and friends. So, you know, they stayed back. Once I got traded from Dallas, they stayed back. And once I got traded to Denver, it was almost like, I didn't want to go, but you know, having a strong wife and having unbelievable kids and the supporting cast that I have, they kind of told me, like, you know, they're going to be okay and basically go ahead and play and continue my career.
You know, that's the main thing. And then also, if you have a team that understands what you're about and they want you there, that's got to help too. In a sense, the Nuggets told you when they traded for you that they wanted you to come in and lead that team. They want you to be a role model for everybody else in the locker room. So what did it mean for you to hear that from the team?
No, it makes a big difference when somebody wants you instead of, you know, it wasn't just like a pass-by for me. It wasn't like, you know, you're going to come here, finish out the year, and we'll see. You know, from day one, they told me they wanted me there. They told me they wanted to be a part of the organization, you know, even, you know, whenever I retire. So it makes it easy for you to go and makes you, you know, you like people. I like people there, and I enjoy the obviously playing and the people in the organization as well. I mean, they treat me with the utmost respect and, you know, feel it's a mutual coming right back from me.
Jameer Nelson joining us. All right, now, when you first get there, though, the locker room did not necessarily have the best chemistry. So how do you go about trying to work on that and improve the relationships among all the guys?
Well, I look at myself as a glue guy for any team. And, you know, I just try to make things work. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, going, and I'm always going to play my game on the court. But in the locker room, I feel like I can pull guys in a direction that we need to be pulled in, that they need to be pulled in. You know, not. I don't think we didn't have any bad apples in that locker room. You know, we just guys that, you know, developed some bad habits, and you know, I kind of lead by example. Or, you know, if somebody needs help, you know, they'll come ask me for advice, and you know, if I can help them, I'll help them.
Right now, there's a lot of young talent on that roster. You've got guys like Gary Harris, Jamal Murray. You've got Nikola Jokic, name a few. What's it been like watching them grow? And then how do you go about leading that particular group?
Well, the development of those guys have been, you know, great. I mean, just seeing them progress and become young men. And those guys are awesome competitors. I mean, honestly, Gary Harris is probably, to me, has improved more than anybody in terms of a young guy that I've been around. I mean, he wants to work and he loves to work, so he'll continue to get better, just like the rest of those guys. We have a great group of player development guys that help out and they push you. They push you to the limit, and then, you know, they back up when they need to. So, you know, it's a good mixture of you know, work and rest, and, you know, just guys being there for one another.
Denver Nuggets, Jameer Nelson joining us. Now, the league had their first ever award show last night, and Jokic was up for best assist of the year for one of his trademark no-look passes over the head. What do you make of how that big man passes? And have you ever seen a big guy pass the ball the way he does?
No, you always see big men score, rebound, but passing is it's an art, man. And people don't realize how hard it is to pass, just to make a simple pass. And he's making no look passes. He's making behind the back passes and over the head. And you know, he could have been up for so many different. He could have been up for the assist of the year for so many different passes that he's thrown over the last year or two. So I mean, it's to me, like I said, it's. I was telling my son last night, you know, he loves to pass. He loves to make plays. He loves to keep people happy. So he's going to have a lot more assists that we saw last night. He's going to have probably better assists than that.
And you're so right. It's an art, and it's a lost art because guys don't like to pass like that, not like they used to.
Right.
And when you play right. in the Western Conference, Jameer, that means you're going to go up against not only great teams, but some great point guards in particular. So who are the guys you like to match up with the most and who bring out the best in you?
I love playing against all those guys. I mean, it's you can't take a night off in the Western Conference. I mean, the NBA in general at that point guard spot. You know, so you have to be on your game. I mean, you know, myself, I'm you know part. You know, I'm leading the team, but I'm still out there playing and you know trying to be as effective as I can. So I mean, you know, you're not going to stop any of those guys one on one. Just try to hope to contain them and you know when you need help, you ask for help And just keep the pressure on them when you have the ball offensively. We played through Joker a lot and, you know, Gallo last year. So, you know, just, you know, myself just taking my opportunities and like I said, trying to be efficient and as effective as I can, you know, night in and night out.
I mentioned at the very top that you were named to the Big Five Hall of Fame earlier this year. What did that honor mean to you?
You know, a lot of people don't really realize the history of the Big Five. I mean, it's so many different players with so much talent. I mean, just being honored, you know, the group of guys that I was honored with and a couple of my friends, Randy Foy, Lynn Greer, you know, a couple of females, and, you know, that played in the Big Five. It's just so much talent, so much history. You know, growing up in Chester, you don't realize or even think about being mentioned with the names and the greats in the Big Five, but you know I was fortunate enough to you know make the Hall of Fame and be inducted this year. Unfortunately, I was there because we were in the playoffs, but you know everything happens for a reason.
Jameer, face that thought for a minute, because when I have Jay Wright from Villanova on the program, the conversation almost always gets to the Big Five and how important those rivalries are to everybody involved. So, how would you describe the Big Five to people who have never been involved in it?
It's like you know, people talk about the SEC, the Big East. It's its own conference inside of Philly, inside of the area. I mean, we have so many different schools, so many in a small radius. It's just one of those things that it's going to be a tough game every night you play in a Big Five game. You're not going to see a team that's going to lay down for you. You're not going to see a team that's going to be a team that's kind of lacking something in the Big Five. Everybody gets up for those games.
I'm aware of what happened at UFC Fight Night 112 on Sunday night. But for some reason, some of you kooks keep bringing it up as if I didn't know what happened or I'm not aware of what happened and you're here to set me straight. You're here to drop some intel on me. But as always, God, I don't know how many times I have to say this, but as always, just because I'm not talking about something on this show does not mean that I'm not aware that something may have happened. I'm aware of it. I just choose not to talk about it because, frankly, I'm not sure that I can trust you degenerates to handle a topic like this. Of course, I'm referring to Felice Herrig and Justine Kish and that match and how that went. Specifically, what happened in the third round when Herrig had Kish in a rear naked choke. And she had that choke in deep. I mean, deep. Check this.
She's on the choke, but that's it. That's in deep. She might go out. She might just not even try to tap and just go out. That's what it's looking like because that is in sunk deep.
Oh, that's tight now. Felice Herrig trying to be the first to finish Justine Kish.
So tough of Kish. She got out of that. She rolled to her back and got out.
Wow.
That explains the toughness. Incredible. That was all the way sunk in.
I mean, that doesn't even do it justice. I have no idea how Justine Kish stayed conscious, let alone how she got out of that hold and finished that fight. It was one of the toughest, most impressive performances I've seen in quite some time. She simply was not going to give up. She looked like she was willing to pass out rather than tap out. And that was in deep. I have no idea. I saw it, and I have no idea how she got out of that, nor how she finished that fight. And unfortunately, it appears that while she did not pass out, something passed out of her. And what do you say we just all be adults about this? Fecal matter. And it appears that while she refused to give up, part of her body did give up, and it left something on the canvas. Yeah, and your point is what? Your point is what? She was being strangled, fighting to stay conscious, and something that was entirely out of her control in that situation happened. Big deal. She had an accident. It happens. Honestly, I'm surprised that doesn't happen way more often. And I'm surprised it's a story after it happened this time. The bigger story is she kept on fighting. The bigger story is she didn't tap after that choke. Or what happened next? She kept on fighting. She showed why she had a 6-fight winning streak going into that match. Because she will not give up. She's that kind of fighter. Man, they're different. Fighters like that, athletes like that, they're wired differently. She clearly was not going to give up. She was going to pass out before she tapped out. So, if you're looking to run up in here, and a number of you have, if you're looking to run up in here with a tweet or an email from Pete McNeely, you can stop right now. Not interested. She went on to lose that fight in a unanimous decision. But then, to me, she won the internet when she fired off one of the all-time great tweets. She tweeted, quote, "I am a warrior and I will never quit. Hashtag bleep happens. Ha ha, be back soon." But she went with the bomb. It's awesome. It's incredible. I mean, that's not a good day, right? Not a good day at work, and she turned it on its head and she went legend with it. Most people in that situation try and deny it or claim that it was something else or refuse to address it. She took it head on. She was awesome about it. She made a joke about it. And she was a warrior. So I'm not looking to hear from any of you wise asses with your tweets or your emails resetting some of your favorite topics about former Green Bay Packer running backs and their laundry containers. I'm not interested at all in that. By the time you've figured out which zinger you want to thumb out or what reference you want to make, I guarantee I've already gotten dozens of others exactly like it. Don't bother. Nor am I interested in hearing from anyone who's looking to crack on Kish. No chance. No room for that. I'm not going to tolerate that either. She's tough as hell. Because I guarantee you that if a UFC fighter had a chokehold on any of you, the result would be exactly the same and probably much, much worse. But I doubt that you would own it the way she did. So I'm really not interested in any of your thoughts or reactions on that matter. I'm telling you, I know what happened, so you can stop hitting me up about the topic. Keep moving. Nothing to see here. I'm not here to mock her or laugh at her. I think she's a warrior. I agree with her. Quote, "I am a warrior and I will never quit. Hashtag bleep happens. Ha ha ha, be back soon." If it were any of the rest of us, you'd probably never see or hear from us ever again. Quote, "bleep happens." What do you tell me you wouldn't have done that if somebody had a chokehold on you? Literally getting strangled, choked to death. That would not have been your reaction. And she got out of it. All right, so let me tell you about some of the reaction I'm getting. Some of you geniuses. "Dear Jim, did you see UFC number 2 on Sunday? Holy crap. That one chick wiped the other one out. That will definitely hamper the loser's career. Scatologically yours, Najee in Green Bay." Signed, Dr. Den Leeks, practicing proctologist. Pretty good, man. What are you, 5 years old? Did you not hear what I just said? On the same call. There's only one way to find out. Mike in Little Rock, Chicago. Well, Mike in Little Rock and Dave, Dr. Dave in Chicago. I mean, hell, it's even confusing to set up, fellas. Let's find out what's going on. Mike, Dave, are you boys there?
Well, right now it's actually just Mike. I'm not sure where the great doctor went off to. I've got better things than to worry about, another pointless bum in Chicago. You know, Rome, my travels take me a lot of different places, and I've seen a lot of disappointing things. Nothing quite as disappointing as the amount of grease that's in Cal's hair, but I've seen a lot of disappointing things. The main thing that I'd actually like to call about today is yesterday Jeff thought he'd be clever and try to pass off his memory problems with my high-quality Kron. I just wanted to go ahead and point something out, man. For if anything, Kron is going to be a performance enhancer. So don't start talking about my bong rips and using it to overshadow your failures and shortcomings, bro. Good luck in the smack off. You can't even. Excuse me. Oh, Jim, I got something in my throat, bro. I need a doctor. Jim, I need a doctor.
Just give yourself the Heimlich against your chair. Choking isn't worse than flaming anyways, and I should know. What up, Jim? Dr. Dave here to the rescue. Mike may be from Team Bake, but I'm here to cook Sarah tea after her call last week. Sorry, I missed it live last week, but I was living the doctor life and getting my new car tricked out. After checking out the podcast, I know it's the only thing thicker than your accent has to be George Costanza's wallet. Nice to know you've been using your sycophants, Dan in Denver and Neil in Cleveland, to get your material on me. That call had me asleep faster than Phil Jackson scouting rookies or Jeannie Buss listening to her new Bose last smack-off call.
Hello.
After getting tricked by trashed by Vic. Sarah, that accent is only trumped by how liberal the Chouds are with forgetting their trailing ahs. After hearing that accent, please stick to Twitter. War vaccinating your children, war doctor clones.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
You know, there was no doubt I was going to run that train wreck, but it was a train wreck that I couldn't stop looking at. You see what they did there? That was Mike in Little Rock, who started to, quote, choke in the middle of his call, so he needed a doctor to save him. So Dr. Dave in Chicago was the one to magically appear and help him out and then rip the baton from him. I mean, it sounded strangely or eerily similar to Trapper and John in C-Town back in the day. That was like the 2017 version thereof. Now, I could sit here and react to it, but why do I even need to when I've got all of you to do it for me? There's my girl at PHX, Nola Girl, first one through. Two losers never make a winner. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it, clones. Now do what you do and just trust that podcast. Check back tomorrow. We will have more of the same right here. See you then.